Sorry. Morning, everyone. Today's Daf Inc. Siva's Daf Lamed. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is Lana Zech Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We are in Chav Tes Amid Beis and pretty much up to speed. We started the third parak of the Masechta. Third parak of the Masechta, as I mentioned yesterday, is a popular parak in yeshivas. Very often, this is the central learning, central limud, and it has to do with the fact that you'll see over the course of this morning as we're going to start the topic of kamleb derabe mine, where a person has two punishments and is only going to have to be suffering the greater of the two punishments, and we'll obviously have much more to say about that as we go through the Gemara. The Mishnah describes the cases of ones and mefate. Really, we're focusing on ones. Pita will come up later on in this parak, and then Pita will come up in the next parak as well. But a man's ma'an is a woman. So as I mentioned yesterday, the two parshas in the Torah that describes ones and pitui. One is in Parshas Mishpatim, the other one is in Parshas Kiseitze. Let's take a look inside of Parshas Kiseitze, where the Torah describes what exactly are the ramifications of someone who is ma'an is a woman. I mentioned this yesterday. Yesterday I didn't read the psukim. Okay, should have done that yesterday. Okay, not too late. Which psukim should I be in? Chaf Beis. Yeah. Chaf Beis 28. There we go. End of Perchav Beis. Okay. Sorry. Okay. End of Perchav Beis. The psukim goes as follows: Kim Sa Ish Nara Vesula Shelor Asaf. A man finds a woman. She's a Nara. So as we already described yesterday, Nara is that middle stage. After she turns 12 and she has Tesa Aros, for the next 6 months she's in the halachic state of being a Nara, the halachic adolescence, if you will, but it's only 6 months. Our adolescence seems to go a lot longer. But the Asher Lo Arasa Usfasa, and he takes her, he forces himself upon her. V'shachavimah v'nimtzu. So number one says the Torah, this is now the end of the parak, that the man who the perpetrator, so he has to give to the father of the woman 50 shekels. 50 shekels is a significant amount of money, and that, as we pointed out yesterday, that falls under the category of knas. That's the punitive fine they have to pay. In addition to, the Torah doesn't mention this over here, but in addition to all the regular compensatory damages that a person has to pay when he assaults another person. So in addition to that, he also has to pay 50 shekels to the father of the Nara. Velosi Elisha, number two, says the Torah, he has to marry her, as we'll discuss later in the Perek. It has to be with her volition. And then number three says the Torah is that after marriage, so he can't divorce her. He has a prohibition in the Torah, a law in the Torah, where he may not divorce her from that point going forward. Okay, so the Torah describes what happens when a man is ma'anis a woman, and the Mishnah yesterday made really just but one point. A lot of permutations, a lot of details, but really just one point. What if a man is ma'anis a woman that he can't marry? Okay, the Torah says he can't marry her. For a whole various host of reasons, like we described yesterday in the Mishnah. She's a Mamzer, she's an Asina, she's a Kusis, whatever the case may be. If he can't marry her, he still has to pay Chamishim Kesef. Okay? Yeah, 50 Shkalim still has to go into her direction. Now, when I say he has to pay her, as we just read in the Pesukim, he doesn't pay her, he pays the father, but she needs to be there. In other words, she's a conduit for that payment. And even though he can't marry her, he still has to pay her. That was exactly the point in the Mishnah.
Not an
Arab,
like adults.
Are
they doing anything you think
is great? No. Again, as we point out time and again, this is just talking about the knas, meaning for the there's still compensatory damages, and meaning it's assault. So like any assault, so you have to pay the compensatory damages. We're just right now talking about the knas. That's the only discussion that we're having in the context of an Arab.
So it would apply to the adult also. There is a
knas
if an adult.
Not a knas. There's no knas. The knas is only for the nara. In other words, but for the adult, you pay for the regular payments of assault. The five general compensatory payments.
The father.
No, the kanas goes to the father. The everything else goes to her. Okay. The when she's an ara, it goes to the father. But that's the shvach. The shvach of an ara goes to the father. But as an adult, it goes to her. Okay. Anyway, the it's an important clarification. But okay. So that's the singular point of the Mishnah, and that's what we finished up yesterday. That when the even if he can't marry her, he still has to pay kanas. Okay, all these cases that we lay down in the Mishnah, so there also is going to be another punishment as well. Well, not in every one of the cases, but certainly in the case where he has relations with a mamzeres or a nesina or kusis, so those are lavim. But the later cases of the Mishnah, where it's a sister or it's his. Or it's his aunt, or it's father's sister, mother's sister, or achos ishto, or if it's his wife's sister, or ishes achiv, or if it's his brother's wife. In all those cases, there's another punishment as well, which is kares. Now, I'm not sure if I made this point clear yesterday. I'll say it clearly now, and that is one of the cases that we're dealing with is ishes achiv, right? Your brother's wife. Now, Rashi very quickly deals with an issue, which, again, I'm not sure if I made this point yesterday, but it's an important point, and it's, once you figure it out, it's obvious, but it just it bears pointing out. If she's your brother's wife, so that means she's a married woman.
Yes.
Right. So, and if she's a married woman, so that's a capital crime. That's chenek. So, as we're going to be spending today, tomorrow, and the next several days discussing, we have a principle of kam lebederabim minei. If you did something which incurs a capital penalty, capital punishment, so you're not going to be paying anything. You're not going to be paying money. You're not going to be paying kanas. You're not paying. So the Mishnah has a case where describing where one of the women that we described is your brother's wife. So she's a. That's Eishes Ish. She's a Nesua. So Rashi says, and it's you have to say this, otherwise you don't know how to make sense of the Mishnah. It doesn't mean that she's currently married to your brother. It means that she was married to your brother. If she's currently married to your brother, so then that's Eishes Ish. There's no money to talk about. There's not going to be any type of monetary payment. We're talking about where she was. She was married to your brother, and she got a divorce from your brother. And also, as long as we're here, let's also just point out. Because this I for sure said yesterday, but also it has to be that she's a basula, meaning that if she's not a basula, so then there's no kanas. So therefore you have to say, and you see Rashi in the Mishnah, where you'll see Rashi in the Mishnah says exactly this. What you have to say is that she went through Erisin with your brother, she got a divorce from your brother, so now she's still a basula, and to you, she's an erva. Like we said in Yevamos, and I hear myself saying this again and again. Once an erva, always an erva. Meaning, once she has the status of being Eishes Achiv, she was the wife of your brother, even if your brother's no longer there, she's still Eishes Achiv. She still has the status of Eishes Achiv. So therefore, a man has relations with her, so he just had relations with an erva, which brings about a liability of an Issa Kares. Okay.
These are all the cases that they are also narrow.
Every one of these cases has to be an ara, otherwise it's no kanas. It's a small window.
It's probably 6 months' time that she got married and she got divorced or whatever.
Right. Well, truth of the matter is that she could have got married earlier. In other words, that getting married earlier will still give her this. Yeah, correct. Okay, good. This is all just a review of what we saw yesterday. How do we know that these halachas are separated? Meaning, how do we know that he still has to pay her kanas despite the fact that he can't marry her? So that's where we ended off yesterday. To put it simply, drushas, meaning an assortment of extra psukim in the Torah, a couple extra basulos, well actually one extra basula with the hay in front, one extra nara with the hay in front. We looked at psukim both in Parshas Ki Seitzei, what I just read this morning, and also in Parshas Mishpatim that deals with pitui. So to make a short story even shorter, drushas, we have ribuyim that teach us that these halachas are not interconnected, and therefore even though he can't marry her, he still has to pay kanas.
But maybe he was trying to do ibum.
No. The case we're dealing with is where he's not trying to do yibum. And again, it's if she was married at the time, so then it's either going to be a mitzvah or it's going to be an isser, depending on whether there's a mitzvah of yibum or not. But that's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a scenario in which she was not married at the time. It's got to be. Otherwise, there's no payment to talk about.
And the brother's still alive.
Yes or no? Irrelevant. Meaning they got a divorce. Okay. And if the, okay. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. If there were children, then no. If there weren't children, yes. Okay, good. That's what. Those are all the things that we dealt with yesterday. Let's continue. We are in the Gemara right now, starting we're up to a new sentence, so it's good. It's a good place to start. Our Mishnah does not go in line with the following braisa. We're on Chaf Tes Amud Beis. We're more than halfway down the Amud, and the Gemara notes Titania. We have the following braisa. Velosi Elisha. The pasuk says he has to marry her, meaning again, like we said in the beginning of this morning. Torah says that when a man's man is a woman, he has to marry her. Shimon Temani Amrisha Sheish Bahavaya. Shimon Temani says it has to be a woman where there's tefisas kedushin, where when you're mekadosh her, it works. Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh Omer, Isha Haruya Lekaima. And according to Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, it has to be a woman that not only Kedushin is Tofes, but it's a sanctioned marriage where even after Kedushin, you can then go further and you can continue the marriage and perpetuate the marriage. Okay, so these are two opinions in this Braisa. These opinions do not go in line with our Mishnah. Meaning that according to this braisa, if it's a woman that he cannot marry, so then there's no knas. Okay? For reasons which we're going to articulate in just a moment. But in the meantime, however, in these two opinions in the braisa, so we said basically the same point, just slightly different than one another. And you know how the Gemara works. Whenever we have two opinions that are just in slight discrepancy, so we want to know what the practical difference is. Meaning, nafkamina. So, again, we have now a halacha, which is, again, Amish doesn't subscribe to this, but the Braisa does, that in order for there to be a kenas, it has to be a woman that either you can, according to opinion number one, either there's tefisas kedushin, where kedushin is going to take hold, or two, the teruah lekaima, where not only is there going to be tefisas kedushin, but the marriage could perpetuate. What's the difference between the two? My benayu, I'm Rabbi Zera, mamzeres nesin, eke benayu. So the Gemara says, I'll give you a simple example. Let's say the woman's a mamzeres. Okay, a mamzeres. Okay, are you allowed to marry a mamzeres? Of course, the answer is no. Again, got the chumash up in the parshas Kiseitse. Good. Torah says you can't marry a mamzeres. I'm sorry. Torah says you're not allowed to marry a mamzeres. But what if you give her a ring and say, Hare am a kedushas li, and you to mamzeres? Is there going to be kedushin? Yes, there is going to be kedushin. The only time that kedushin is blocked, well, not the only time. But as a rule, as a halachic rule, the time that kedushin is going to be blocked is that if it's an isakaris, then and only then is the kedushin going to be blocked. But if it's not isakaris, despite the fact that the Torah says don't do it, but still there's going to be tefisas kedushin. So if it's a mamzeres or it's a nesina, okay, nesina we talked about yesterday, givonim. If it's a mamzeres or nesina, so there's tefisas kedushin. Now, can the marriage sustain? Meaning, if you, let's say, moved into a community, so and the rabbi would sit you down and say, look, what you did is wrong. Although it's effective, it's wrong. You can't remain married. She's a mamzeres. Got to give her a divorce. So this is where the nafkamin is going to be. Laman damer yesh bahavaya, hanam yesh bahavaya. So is there tefisas kedushin? The answer is yes, there is. Laman damer rula kaima hainu rula kaima. And if your parameters of kenas are a woman that not only is there going to be tefisas kedushin, but also rula kaima, it's not true over here. The rabbi, the basin, is going to tell you got to divorce her. So this price over here is not in agreement with our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah says that if a man is minus any one of these women, there's going to be kenas. This price says, with varying degrees of difference, there's not going to be kenas. Now the Gemara says, okay. Now, as long as we're here on these two opinions of of Shimon HaTemani and Rabbi Shimon Manasseh, the Gemara just wants to iron out now. The nafkamin we just gave is good, but what if you subscribe to the viewpoint of Rabbi Akiva? We know that according to Rabbi Akiva, so in many occasions there's not going to be tefisas kedushin, not just isuri karis, but even just a lav. And we're gonna expand Rabbi Kiva's opinion in just a moment. But even if it's a lav, there's not going to be tefisas kedushin. So according to Rabbi Kiva, what's the difference between these two opinions that we just offered? So Ula Rabbi Kiva Damein Kedushin Tovs Mechayv Lav Ma'ika Benayu. I'm sorry, Mai Benayu. So the Gemara says, even according to Rabbi Akiva, there are going to be cases in the Torah where there will be tefisas kedushin, and therefore the child will not be a mamzer. Just to make this point as clear as possible, meaning there is a clear relationship between tefisas kedushin and the creation of mamzerim. Meaning that if kedushin is tofes, meaning even if the Torah says don't marry her, but if kedushin takes hold, So the resulting child from that union will not be a mamzer. If there's no tefisas kedushin, so then the resulting child of that union would be a mamzer. So as we'll see in just a moment, the more you are of the opinion that there's no kedushin, so then the more of the opinion you are going to be that the child is going to be a mamzer. Meaning, whenever there's not going to kedushin is not going to take hold, resulting child is going to be a mamzer. So when you hold like Rabbi Akiva, as the Gemara is going to show us in just a moment, so you're not creating more mamzerim. I mean, that's obviously the responsibility and the fault of the two people who got involved in this marriage. But in other words, in more cases, there's going to be a mamzerim. So the Gemara says, so now according to Rabbi Akiva, what's the difference between Shimon Itamani and Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh? The Gemara says, an amana to a kohen gadol. And the Gemara goes on to explain that, let's see the Braisa, Ditanya. Rabbi Simai Omer, mina kol ose Rabbi Kiva mamzerim. Rabbi Kiva would make a mamzer nearly in every case. I know it says that kol, but you know the rule. With every rule, there's an exception. So in most every case, so Rabbi Kiva is going to have the child being a mamzer. Chutz me almana la kohen gadol. And the exception to that would be if an almana married a kohen gadol, which means that it's a lav. Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry an almana. Torah says he has to marry a basula, but yet the resulting child is not going to be a mamzer. Why not? Sharei amra Torah lo yikach v'lo yichalal. Because the Torah, in describing that kind of union, says that he shouldn't take her and he shouldn't profane. Meaning chilulin hu osev enosen mamzerim. He's going to make chalalim. The resulting children that comes from that marriage is going to be a chalal, but chalal to the exclusion of mamzerim.
The almana can still be a basula also, like we said before. The almana can still be a basula.
Right, exactly the point. And still, despite the fact that she's because she's a basula, she's going to receive a kenas. Okay. And by the way, Rashi points that over here. Even though the Gemara illustrated this in the case of a Kohen Gadol to an Amana, truth of the matter is that at this stage of the Gemara, we could also be talking about a Kohen to a Grusha, because it's basically the same point. When a Kohen marries a Grusha, so what happens? So according to Rabbi Simai, same thing. The child is going to be a halal, and a halal to the exclusion of being a mamzer. Even though it's a lav, even though it's a negative prohibition, but the Torah goes out of its way to say that the resulting child is a halal, not a mamzer.
Why do they use any Kohen Gadol example?
Because the pasuk. Because that's where the pasuk says it straight out. But who had dinner would be true, and Rashi says, who had dinner would be true even to from a Kohen to a Grusha. Okay, that is good. So now even according to Rabbi Simai's understanding of Rabbi Akiva, we have a nafkamina. Ula Rabbi Yeshava, we're towards the bottom of the Amud. Ula Rabbi Yeshava damar bo menitzuach al Akiva ben Yosef. Let's go scream at Akiva ben Yosef. Shaya omer kol she'en lo bia b'Yisrael havla mamzer. Any time it's an illicit union, every single time the Torah does not sanction this marriage, child is a mamzer. So, and obviously, according to Rabbi Yeshavev, his understanding of Rabbi Akiva, now by the way, mind you, he's a combatant, he doesn't agree with it, but his understanding of Rabbi Akiva is that any illicit union is going to result in a mamzer, including a kohen to a grusha, including a kohen gadol to a amana. So my benayu, so then that's true. So then what would be the practical difference between Shimon Timani and Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh? Ike benayu, the Gemara says, now we're in the top of Lamed Amar Aleph, chayve asay. So it would be an example of a negative prohibition where the Torah doesn't put it in negative terms, but rather the Torah says, here's who you should marry, and by inference we now know who you shouldn't marry. The two classic examples of this would be a mitzvah and a dummy. Not allowed to marry an Egyptian. An Egyptian convert. Egyptian before conversion, that's a separate issue. We're talking about an Egyptian convert. Torah says that only dor shlishi yavo bekal. Only when you get to the third generation of Egyptian convert, then and only then are you allowed to marry. Which clearly, inferentially means that for generations one and two of the Egyptian convert, you're not allowed to marry. This is what's called a lav haba mechlal asay. It's a negative prohibition, but derived from a positive commandment. And that's not a lav. It's not categorized as a lav. And therefore, according to Rabbi Kiva, even though it's a prohibited union, but it's not a lav, and therefore the resulting child is not going to be a mamzer. Or, to put it in other terms, there would be Tfisas Kedushin. Now, if that's true, so now we have a nafka mina between Shimon HaTeimani and Rabbi Shimon ben Benasya. The Gemara says, The Gemara says, look, Rabbi Yishavev could have been doing one of two things. Either he could have been responding to Rabbi Simai, or he could have been making an independent statement. If he was responding to Rabbi Simai, so then good. Meaning, what did Rabbi Simai say? Not every lav. What Rabbi Yishavev saying? No, every lav, but only lavim. So then that's true. Meaning then we have carved out an actual practical difference between the two tanaim at the beginning of today's daf. However, e time denav shei kamar, but if Rabbi Yishavev wasn't responding to Rabbi Simai, but rather he was making an independent statement, meaning don't put context to Rabbi Yishavev. Just read it as it is. How is it read as it is? Anytime the union between two people is simply prohibited, it's illicit, the Torah does not sanction it, the resulting child is going to be a mamzer. And once we have no context, that means that even if a man were to marry a first or second generation Egyptian convert, the resulting child is going to be a mamzer. So now, if that's the way you understand Rabbi Yishavev, mm-hmm. So that means that there's no difference between Shimon HaTeimani and Rabbi Shimon ben Benasya. Comes out now that they're both saying the same thing. An illicit union, according to Rabbi Akiva, would result in mamzer in every single scenario. So what's the difference between saying there's no tefisas kedushin versus ein eruv lekayma? Answer to Gemara. Kol shein lo bia b'Yisrael v'la mamzer v'afilu chai v'aseh mai b'nai. What's the difference? Ikeh b'nai. The Gemara says, no, even according to Rabbi Yishavev, there's still going to be one scenario where there would be a practical difference, and that'd be the following. Be'ula l'kohen gadol. Let's say a kohen gadol is ma'anes a be'ula. Now, I'll present the Gemara like Rashi. Tosfos has a different understanding of our Gemara, but right now I'll limit my comments to Rashi. Rashi says, what are we talking about over here? The woman had premarital relations. Okay, Kohen Gadol comes over to her and is ma'anes her. I know, but always take a small step backwards and just think about what we're talking about. You know, in terms of Kohen Gadol, the most spiritual man of the Jewish people, and this is how he's behaving. Okay, but again, that's not the point that we're discussing right now. We're just clinically trying to figure out when, according to Rabbi Kiva, according to Rabbi Shaviv's understanding of Rabbi Kiva, when would a union be prohibited, and yet the resulting child is not going to be a mamzer, and that would be the following. She had premarital relations. Now, Rashi points out over here, now, it's true that there is one opinion in the Gemara Yavamas that we saw together not so long ago that says that if a woman has premarital relations, she's a zona. And therefore, a zona is a prohibition. A lav, a zona is not allowed to marry a kohen. But, and therefore the resulting child would be a mamzer, according to this opinion. But Rashi points out over here, that is the opinion of Rabbi Lazar. We do not subscribe to that opinion. So Rashi says it, and if you remember the Gemara back in Yavamos, the Gemara over there explicitly rejected his viewpoint. So here she had premarital relations, she's not a zona. So what is she to the Kohen Gadol? Simply not permitted to the Kohen Gadol. It's not a lav, it's not a, it's just simply she's not permitted. And the reason why is because the Torah instructs the Kohen Gadol that when he finds a wife, she has to be a besula. And this woman in question is a be'ula. So he is not to be with her. So, ika be'na be'ula Kohen Gadol. The Gemara's next question, the obvious next question. Okay, but if we're reading Rabbi Yishavev as an independent statement, and that means that any time it's an illicit union, it's a prohibited union, so the resulting child is a mamzer. So, umayshna. So, Gemara asks a very simple question. But why is this case different than the previous case? In the previous case, we're talking about where he was ma'anes, a first or second generation Egyptian. What is that? That's a lava b'machlala say. That's a positive isser, if that makes sense to you. It's an isser asay. This too for the Kohen Gadol is an isser asay. So although you're right, it's a case, but why should this case be different than the previous case? So the Gemara says, well, it's different because it's not a universal asay. it is an extraordinarily limited assay. It only applies to one person amongst the Jewish people. And because it's such a limited assay, so therefore the resulting child is not a mamzer. Now, I realize that I'm not giving a good rationale, I'm not giving a good explanation why that should be so. I mean, just because it only is limited to the Kohen Gadol, so therefore the resulting child is not a mamzer, but I'm not sure how to give a good explanation. The point being is that even according to Rabbi Yishavev, this would be the one case where the resulting child would not be a mamzer, and so therefore we have an extraordinarily limited nafkamina, but still a nafkamina between the opinions of Shimon Etimani and Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya. Okay. So their positions are that in order for her to be able to collect a kenas, there has to be either a tfisis kedushin or ru'uy lakayma, and we just spent the last 50 minutes trying to carve out what the difference is between those two opinions. Amrav Chista, on top of Lamed Amin Aleph, about 8 lines from the top. Amrav Chista akomodim evalanidish emesham kenas. A man is ma'anes a woman who's menstruating, so he has to pay her kenas. Now, Lamand amiyesh bahavaya hanamiyesh bahavaya. Now the Gemara says over here, totally understood. Because, is there tfisis kedushin? The answer is yes, there is. We also did this back in Yavamas as well. Even though a man to have relations with a nida is an isser kares, and also we could also point out that the Parsha of Nida, or the Isser of Nida, is found together with all the other arayos in the Torah, in Parshas Achrimos, in Parshas Kedoshim. Nevertheless, Nida is the exception to the rule, and that is that despite the fact that relations with her would be Nesar Kares, but there's Tfisas Kedushin. He's Mekadosh, a woman who's a Nida, he hands her a ring and says, Harei HaMekadosh Atzli, they're married. So, if he's ma'anis, the woman is anida, he's going to have to pay her kenas. Laman damaru lekaima hanamaru lekaima. As far as sustaining the marriage, for sure you could sustain the marriage. Not only will the kedushin take effect, but marriage can perpetuate as well. Okay, so, good. So that's just, according to these Tanayim, even they would agree that if a man is ma'anis anida, so he's going to have to pay her kenas. Okay, and all this brings us now to the main topic of today's daf, and that is the following. What did we learn together in our Mishnah? That if a man is ma'anis a woman, so he has to pay her kenas. And even if he can't marry her, he has to pay her kenas. Now, Tanaim disagree with that. That was the first part of today's shir, but the our Mishnah subscribes to the viewpoint that even if he cannot marry her, he has to pay her kenas. Now, the cases that were chosen for our Mishnah are all cases where, to varying degrees, he can't marry her because she's prohibited to him. Okay? And in a number of these cases in our Mishnah, she's prohibited to him with the serious penalty of kares. So that means as follows, that when he was ma'anis her, so two things occurred simultaneously. Number one, he's liable for the kares penalty for having relations with a woman who the Torah prohibits through the punishment of kares. Number two, it also occurs a financial penalty of the 50 shkalim kenas. And so, what is our Mishnah assuming that we know? And even if we don't know it, we know it now. So, that even though there are two punishments that this man is looking at, and those two punishments occurred concurrently, nevertheless, he's still going to have to pay. Now, as I mentioned, this is an extraordinarily popular parak in the yeshivas, because we have a general principle which we're going to be getting right now. And that is the topic of kam lebederabamine. And that means that, generally speaking, when a person does one act that incurs two liabilities, and one of those liabilities is a capital crime, so that is going to overshadow the financial penalty that he owes. And when I say overshadow, that means that he doesn't have to pay the financial penalty that he owes. So it's a simple example. If I were to go into your backyard on Shabbos, and I were to start a fire, and with that fire that I started, I burned a whole bunch of your possessions. So so that means now that I lit a fire on Shabbos, that's an iser, that's misa midei adam, that's a capital crime, coupled with a financial penalty that was incurred, all with the lighting of a fire. So now the halacha is kamlei bidirabimine. We only uphold kamlei bidirabimine with the greater of the two, which means that I'm going to be facing capital punishment, and I will not have to pay. Now, when I say I will not have to pay, we'll talk later on in terms of, does that mean Beis Din doesn't sit me down and force money out of me? Or does it mean that I'm absolutely exempt from paying altogether? Okay, that's a discussion that we're gonna have later in the parak. But in the meantime, however, just the basic idea of kamle b'derabim ne. What's the source?
Wait.
Good. So, what's the source of kamle b'derabim ne? So once again, stay tuned as we're going to be discussing that as well. What our Mishnah is taking for granted is that we will employ the rule of kamle b'derabim ne if there are two corporal punishments, meaning if it's, let's say, Mises Beis Din and money, where both of those are tried and adjudicated by not a heavenly court, but the court right here on earth. What our Mishnah is assuming is that if the greater punishment is not a corporal punishment, but it's a heavenly punishment, so that will not disrupt the financial obligation, and you're still on the hook for the financial obligation. That's clear from our Mishnah. And now what we're going to be spending the rest of today's daf learning is that not everyone agrees with our Mishnah. Some are of the opinion, or I should say rather, one is of the opinion, it's Rav Nechunya ben Akana, which we're about to see in a moment. He's of the opinion that if a person does something which incurs two penalties, one is kares and the other is money, the kares will overshadow the monetary obligation, and you will not be on the hook for the monetary obligation. That's the opinion of Nechunya ben Akana. Our Mishnah clearly is disputing that viewpoint. Let's see all this together now inside. So, Ula Afuke mid Rav Nechunya ben Akana. Our Mishnah is against Rav Nechunya ben Akana. He's telling you the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Rav Nechunya ben Akana haya oseh Yom Kippur k'Shabbos l'tashlamim. He says that Shabbos and Yom Kippur are the same in terms of payment, meaning like the scenario I described, where I start a fire on your property on Shabbos, so my capital crime will overshadow the financial obligation. Same thing would be true on Yom Kippur as well. Now, Yom Kippur and Shabbos are nearly identical, with one notable exception. Number of notable exceptions, but one basic exception, and that is the punishment. When a person willingly violates Yom Kippur, so it is not punishable by Beis Din, it's not a capital crime, it is kares. Well, one who willfully violates Yom Kippur is subject to kares. Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana says, as it relates to the halacha of kamle b'derabim ne, they are the same. Just like capital crime overshadows your financial obligation, so too does kares.
Yom Kippur is on Shabbos, right?
Yeah, then right. Then right. It takes on the life of Shabbos. So upata min hashlomim af Yom Kippur mischai ben Asher upata min hashlomim. Now, my time at the Rav Nechunya ben Akana. And for the rest of today's daf, it's interesting, we're going to be learning for a while, at least for the rest of today, what is behind his opinion. Now, it's an opinion that's not accepted la halacha. Meaning la halacha, we say we accept the opinion of our Mishnah. Okay. But Torah Hi, it's still part of the corpus of Torah. Next 30 minutes of less. Much less. the next bit of the daf is let's not call it academic, because it's much more than academic. It's Torah, but it's not an accepted viewpoint. But in the course, but you know how Gemara works. In the course of our discussion, though, we will be touching on relevant halachas, meaning halachas that are accepted, even in the course of this discussion. What is behind the opinion of Nechunya ben Akana? Ben Akana, and the Gemara is going to give us two different explanations amongst the Amoraim, and then after having gone through the two explanations, a nafka mina between these two explanations, and that is the end of today's daf. Okay. Amar Abaye. Namar Ason bi Adam and Namar Ason bi Deshamayim. So it says Ason two times in the Torah. One, it says it as it relates to Bidei Adam, corporal punishment, and the other is Bidei Shamayim. And Ma Ason Hamor Bidei Adam Patamin Tashlamim. Just like the Ason mentioned in terms of corporal punishment, you're going to be exempt from Teshlamim. Similarly, with the Ason, with Shamayim, you're going to be Patur min Teshlamim. Okay, the Gemara over here just assumes that our knowledge of Chumash is so good, Gemara doesn't even bother telling us what the Pesukim are. Okay, one Pesuk is found in Mishpatim, which just start in Chumash, and that is the description of what happens if a man hits a pregnant woman and, God forbid, causes a miscarriage. So the Torah says that Perichov Aleph Pasukhov Beis, thank you. If two men are fighting and a pregnant woman gets in the middle of the two and she gets hit, but she did not die, I know she so then there's going to be a monetary payment, and that's if the woman didn't die. But what if the woman did die? So if the woman did die, so then there will be an exemption from the financial obligation. Okay, the fetus, by the way, not for our discussion right now. It's not our topic. But the fetus is in utero is viewed as an asset, although termination of its life is ritzicha. It is a bit tricky to to understand exactly what the parameters are. But nevertheless, for our purposes, let's just look at it as an asset, and so therefore, If you cause a miscarriage, but the woman didn't die, and that blow that you hit the woman with, so then you have to pay. If, however, God forbid, the woman died, and so then you don't have to pay the asset. Why? The rule of Kamalei B'Derabimine. In fact, that's a source. Where else do we find Asur in the Torah? So that's part back in Sefer Bereishis. The brothers are trying to convince the father to let Binyamin go down. Okay, good. All right. So the brothers are trying so desperately to convince Yaakov to send Binyamin down. They're not going to get food unless Binyamin comes down with them. And what's his reaction? What's Yaakov's reaction? Nope. Not sending him down. His brother died. He's the only thing I have left of Rachel. Ukarao Ason. And something catastrophic will happen to him. But Derech. And I'm not going to recover. Loose translation, but the word ason over there is used in a description of Yaakov describing what could possibly happen to Binyamin if I send him down with you. An ason, some sort of catastrophe. So the Gemara says. So I'm sorry. So you have these two words. So ostensibly, what we have over here is Gzeirah Shavah. And the Gzeirah Shavah is coming to teach us that. Just like the Ason mentioned in Parshas Mishpatim is Kamlei B'Derabimine, and that's talking about corporal punishment, so too the Ason mentioned in Parshas Bereishis also teaches us that the rule of Kamlei B'Derabimine can be applied even if it was not a natural catastrophe, if it was an unnatural catastrophe, something that happened by the hands of heaven. Okay. Stay tuned. We have obviously more to discuss on this, on Abai's explanation. So the Gemara says, look, Yaakov was absolutely concerned that something would happen to his son Binyamin. But how did you know what Yaakov was worried about? Maybe he wasn't worried about cold and heat, which right now the Gemara says that's heavenly. Maybe he was worried about lions and robbers, which the Gemara at this point is saying that's bidei adam. That's something which is terrestrial. Atu, so Gemara says Atu Yaakov, aha azar, halo azar, Yaakov akomi li azar. So the Gemara says, no, Yaakov was worried about everything. He was worried about things that were min hashamayim, and he was worried about things which were on this earth. Both of those were under, was Yaakov's concern. Now, v'tzinim pachim, now the Gemara made the comment, see, v'tzinim pachim, that something comes directly from God, then we have nothing to do with that. And then the Gemara says that an attack by lions is something which God has nothing to do with. To which what we're going to do in the next 10-15 lines of Gemara is that we're just going to reverse it, because the reverse is true. So the Gemara says that when you catch a cold, you know whose fault that is? It's not God's fault. It's your fault. You didn't put on a jacket. Okay? Right? Yeah, correct. Right. What are you doing going up north, right, in sub-zero weather? That's your fault. That's not a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? Good. So the... Shenemar, Sinim Pachim, Adarchi Kesh, Omer Nafsha Yerachek Behem. The Pasuk of Mishlei says, do you know how to not catch a cold? It's very simple. Avoid it. In other words, it's totally within our power to avoid catching a cold. The Rambam, and this is predictable, but the Rambam writes that basically most illnesses are preventable. And you take care of yourself, good diet, good exercise, and you take care of yourself, and most illnesses are preventable. And that's nothing to do with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Sioux, and then the Gemara says, and also, we're not going to answer the question. All we're going to end up doing is just reversing. So v'su, are you vegan v'bidi adam neinu v'amar Rav Yosef v'chein tani Rabbi Chia? Miyam shachar beis hamikdash afa pisha bitlu sanhedrin arba misos lo bitlu. After the destruction of the beis hamikdash, we no longer can try capital crimes, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of it. Meaning, if somebody's chai of a capital punishment, so we don't have a beis din, Kadosh Baruch Hu will now act as serve as a beis din. And what's going to end up happening is that the person is going to experience a demise, which is going to be very similar to what beis din would have done. Gemara is going to go through every example. So lo batlu habitlu. So the Gemara said, well, first, the Gemara was just unhappy with the way the Braisa said it. The Braisa says, the Dalamisos have not been nullified. Well, of course they have. We don't have a beis din anymore. So habadluhu, ela din arba misos labadlu. So the Gemara, as a point of clarification, just simply says, no. What we meant was that the punishment is still there. It'll just take on the form of quote unquote nature. So, for example, mishin is chayv skila. Let's say somebody does something which would incur the skila penalty. Oh no, from a nagag, oh chayv dorsaso. So either he's going to fall from a roof, which, if you remember, the sixth parak of Sanhedrin, is pretty much what happens during skila, or he's going to be attacked by an animal. Right, blunt force, similar to skila. Umishin is chayv sreifa nofa b'dleiko nachash machisho. Someone is liable to a sreifa penalty. So without a beis din, so he's either going to be caught in a fire or nachash machisho, or he's going to be bitten by a snake, and that venom is viewed as it's like burning him. Mishin is chayv hariga onim solamachos olistim by malav. Someone who is chayv hereg, decapitation, so will meet his end either by being handed over to the king. Him to the authorities, where they'll behead him. I know. Unfortunately, we have the visualizations now. Oh, listen, by Malav, or he's going to be assaulted by robbers. Okay, Mishin is chayev chenek. Someone who's chayev chenek, strangulation. Oh, tovei benar, will drown in the ocean. Oh, meis b'sarn chuni, or is going to suffer some sort of asphyxiation. Either way, comes out now that when you're attacked by a lion, that's not bidei adam, that's bidei shemayim. When you catch a cold, that's bidei adam. So ala epoch. So the Gemara says, okay, point taken, correction made. Are you vegan v'bidei shemayim, sino pachim bidei adam? All right, you're right. The lions being attacked by a lion, that's between you and God. Catching a cold, that's you. That's a you issue. So okay. So anyway, but fine. With that correction aside, still, we have. Let's not lose the forest. We are trying to explain what the source of Rav Nechunya ben Hakana is. That when a person incurs two liabilities, one being kares and the other being a financial obligation, and both are stemming from the same act. So how do I know that the kares is going to knock out the financial obligation? The gzeirah shava ason ason. That's approach number one. And here we go now. Approach number two. Rava amar time of the Rav Nechunya ben Hakana mehacha. A different source, and that is a pasuk in Chumash. Let's say someone's obligated to receive a capital crime, and let's say that Basin doesn't do their job, and they don't adjudicate. So, and specifically, the pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim is talking about somebody who gave his son over to the Molech, right? A very back then popular form of idolatry. Which was to hand your son over to Molech, meaning to slaughter your son for Molech, but that's a capital crime. So v'samtiani is panai beishahu over mishpachto. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, so if Beis Din doesn't take care of it, I'll take care of it. V'hichrati oso. And what am I going to do? I'm going to cut him off. So what do you see from that pasuk? It's pretty clear. You see from that pasuk is that in absentia of a capital punishment, if Beis Din doesn't do it, so Kadosh Baruch Hu says, kares, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "Don't worry, he'll be tried by me, and I will employ Kares." So, what does this pasuk seem to indicate? There's an equivalency between the two. So, Amar Torah, Kares Shali Kamisa Shalachem. My Kares is like your Misa. Ma Misa Shalachem Patam and Natashlamim. Av Kares Shali Patam and Natashlamim. So, just like Misa Bidei Adam will exempt payment for financial obligation, so too will my Kares. Okay. So, Machlokis Abayin Rava, what the source of Rabbi Nechunya Ben Akana is. Either the Gzer Shava Vason Ason, or the pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. So my ika bein Rava la Abaye. And again, second time today, where we're going to look for a nafkamina. What's the practical difference between the two? Both arriving at the same conclusion that if there is kares together with a tashlamim, the kares will knock out your financial obligation. Ika beinayu, the Gemara says zarsha achal truma. Practical difference would be the following. Let's say you're not a Kohen and you eat Truma. Not a Kohen eating Truma, what kind of penalty is that? Misa b'day shamayim. Very first day of Yevamos, right? Day one, Daf Beis Amud Aleph. Tosfos over there has a couple of opinions of what Misa b'day shamayim is as opposed to Kares. Whatever it is, we could just simply say right now, it's one rung lower than Kares. It's very similar to Kares. It's just a stage lower than Kares. Okay. You want more detail, so take a look at Tosfos in the beginning of Yevamos, where he discusses it. But anyway, the point is as follows. Zar Shachu Truma. Le Abaye Pater Ule Rava Chayev. Now, according to Abaye, so you would be exempt. According to Rava, you would be Chayev. Meaning, according to Abaye, you'd be exempt because. What was Abaye's source? Abaye's source was Gzer Shavav Ason Ason. What's that telling us? That anything Bidei Shemayim is equivalent to Bidei Adam. The Ason Ason doesn't tell us what Bidei Shemayim we're talking about. Just simply says Bidei Shemayim. So that would include Kares. It would include Misa Bidei Shemayim, as opposed to the pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. What does that pasuk say? That if you don't try him with a capital crime, Vihichrasi. The Torah there specifies and says not just any heavenly punishment, but specifically Kares. So the Gemara points out that that's going to be the practical difference between Abaye and Rava. Ula Rava Chayv. Period. Okay, stop over here. We'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Tomorrow we will get through some very nitty gritty. It's good, but it'll be very detailed in terms of the rules of Kamalei B'Drabimini, which is basically that the only is going to be an exemption when both are emanating from the same act. It has to be the same act. So tomorrow's daf, it's going to be a classic daf in discussing how to define what is the same act. Okay, so come again tomorrow. Tomorrow, just in terms of scheduling, same. In other words, start a little after 7, we'll end at 8. And if you want the Bal Curry tomorrow for the 8 o'clock, is okay. He's acceptable.